McGruff here.
The crime dog?
Yep.
I think I'm going to need your help. I've got an internet bully.
Okay, well, what to do is...
Maybe you could put a virus on her computer, or a tracking device, or a bug.
You don't have to do that, are you?
Or maybe we could get an attack dog. You ever see those attack dogs that can, like, rip a person's arm off? Seriously. Or like a SWAT team, a cyber SWAT team or something. Or like an army. Did you ever see that zombie army movie? We should get a zombie army.
Wait. All you need to do to stop an internet bully is delete their messages and never forward them on.
So, no zombies?
No zombies.
Bummer.
Delete cyberbullying. Don't write it, don't forward it. For more information, visit ncpc.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
All right, don't be disappointed. There'll be plenty of zombies on these airwaves coming up, so stay tuned. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. It's 6:01 time, once again, for Off the Wall. We'll be right back. And the very good evening to everybody. The program is off the wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hey, E, what's up?
Exciting baseball game that preceded this show.
It wasn't exciting.
Well, it was exciting up until the end when it got kind of crazy. Well, it was made exciting. Let's put it that way.
You want to know something exciting?
What?
I'll apologize. I'm a little out of it. I don't know what time zone, where we are.
Daylight savings? Is that what's confusing you?
Oh, gosh. No,
that was last week.
That was a week ago. Yeah. How could I possibly... Oh, no. I'm not suffering from that. No, it's okay. You can have the time zones. That's fine. No. I'm just a little busy. The weather's caught me off guard a little. I guess March is just this roller coaster.
Mm-hmm,
and
getting another nor'easter tomorrow, you know. Another snowstorm.
Is this three or four? This four?
Four. Number four in the last 10 days.
Yeah. Now, I've read a little. There's some connection to the Arctic and Greenland and all this stuff. So
Greenland? Really?
Yeah, it's all Greenland's fault.
Okay.
We'll have to go sort it out. But it's exciting. We're definitely, I guess, anticipating spring. It's not really here, but it's physically, technically that time of year.
It's officially today, I think, right?
It is. In the spirit of that, I went and was kicking around in the garage, and I started the Smart.
Okay, yes.
We can
reveal that little tidbit of information. The first time in, I don't know how many years.
I got it working.
Started the Smart Car.
You know what this is? You remember the...
The first Smart Car, by the way, in New York State that's been hiding away for the last few years.
It has. It's been hibernating.
It's a diesel Smart.
It's been in its smart hole.
It's a diesel Smart, and it's smaller than the other Smart Cars that you might see because it was from Canada. And that's not why. But it's just it predated the American version, which had to be bigger.
A very, very early 450... Smart for two, which I had been wrestling with and avoiding, but we eventually rolled it into a garage, and that seemed to be good for it. It needed a little hibernation period.
Well, the owner of the garage didn't agree, but eventually he went away.
We worked it out.
Yeah. So
we went and visited it, and it eventually dawned on me that we had this battery. It's this newfangled, I guess, they're called AGM glass mat batteries. Anyway, the company that makes them. Do you remember when Hillary Clinton ran for president?
I have a dim recollection of those days.
Okay, she had this one company, Johnson Controls, and it was a big bee in her bonnet about Johnson Controls and how she was going to hold them accountable. And oddly enough, the NRA, which is
Johnson,
striking.
Johnson Controls is the name of the company.
That's the name of the company.
What an evil sounding name.
It is a bit evil sounding.
How can you have a verb in your name that is a negative thing? Controls.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Smith and, well, yes, that's already taken. Okay, fine.
I think like process control, but in this case, it's the process of you buying their overpriced batteries that don't work. Anyway,
okay, all right.
So I switched back to like your standard chemical battery, and the Smart Car seemed a lot happier. It's running. It's started up. It's not running now, but that
you
was
sure about that. We left in kind of a hurry.
Yeah. But it's better that we made the show. Point is,
the game was going to go into extra innings. That's why I was taking my time. And then
all of a sudden,
eight runs in the ninth inning, and we had to hightail it over here.
Yeah. But that's good springtime news. It's always nice to, kick around, do a little spring cleaning, and get things going that have been idle.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, I like that car reference you threw in.
It went from idle to idling.
Uh-huh,
I got ahead of my own pun. But anyway, That was one success I had. I'm again a little out of it.
Well, you have to be congratulated on your diligence in continuing to work on this project to get the damn thing running.
Well, I have other plans, but I just think that this thing was really not holding a charge, and the quality of this company's products has gone down because back in the aughts, I had success with some of their products.
Stop! I've noticed. I've noticed this over the past couple of months, if not less time, that everybody is suddenly referring to that period of time as the aughts. And while it was the aughts, which the year 2000 to 2009, I guess, nobody called it that. So what did something happen? Did I miss a memo or something? Everyone's calling it the aughts now.
Well, people like, I mean, I think the nostalgia, the whole, like, aughts and, you know, back in aughts, it's just funny. I think people just
they didn't call it that
because it's silly.
They didn't call it that in 1900. They didn't call it the aughts then.
But somehow you can look back at, and like, there's a little twinkle, a little sense of humor, and I'm twinkling to that period in the world.
George W. Bush had just been elected president, all right? 9/11 happened soon afterwards. Then the Iraq War came. What was funny about that period of time? I wasn't laughing. No. Nobody was laughing. All right, then. The aughts. Okay, no, go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, no, no. I'm so glad you did. But the time period, at that point, you know, the products I had been familiar with seemed better than they are now. Although I think a lot of people notice this. A lot of consumers notice that sometimes, you know, there's variation. You get the wrong batch or whatever. But now I'm wondering, maybe Hillary had a point, because I had, you know, thought, okay, we replace it with this different type of battery, but it just does not do well in cold weather or the Northeast or something. I don't know. Maybe it only works in, like, New Mexico or California or something. So, yeah, that's exciting. And I have a plan, I think, to go forward, but we're going to have to, like, slowly maybe try driving, you know, and maybe get some air in the tires. It's exciting. You know, it'll be a fun little springtime project, so I'll update on that. And maybe we can get access to the computer and do some other diagnostics before we go for any long adventures. But that would be fun to be able to drive again around New York City and in the New York State and Northeast.
And if you hear a commotion in your neighborhood, it could be the smart car driving by and people saying, what in God's name is that?
That's right. Maybe we'll get some custom decals going. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, okay.
That was my little success.
No, that's great. And hats off to you for accomplishing that. We did something fun yesterday. Before we get into the serious stuff, I just want to kind of deal with the more lighthearted things. We were watching the Academy Awards a couple of weeks ago. Felt like a couple of years.
We should make up a new unit of measurement, week year.
Okay.
Right, like a light year, and that's like how we, you know, tell time now is a 1 week year ago.
Yeah, but the problem is this feels like a week year, period. So I don't know how you'd be able to differentiate that by saying it.
All right, well, we won't get into that. But
yeah.
Go on.
I don't want to get dark.
So we
were watching the Academy Awards, and we were, you know, saying to ourselves, I wonder who won this award before. The Shape of Water or whatever, they won this year. You know, how many films, it was the 90th Academy Awards, who won the first one? So we went back and looked it up and discovered that, in fact, 1929 was the first Academy Award ceremony held in a hotel in Hollywood, cost $5 to get in. And the winners were all known in advance, like months in advance, but it was just a ceremony to basically hand out awards. And the film that won was a silent movie called Wings. And I looked it up, and Wings was this epic tale made for $2 million, a lot of money in 1920. Actually, it was 1927 the film was made. But think about that, $2 million budget. It was about the war, the Great War, which is only 10 years before that, 1917, World War I as we know it now. They had actual airplanes. They had a cast of literally thousands of extras, infantry. They cooperated with the military. The military cooperated with them. And it was basically, it was worthy of winning Film of the Year for the first Academy Award. Also being a silent movie, that made it particularly interesting. The film was lost, and no copies were thought to be in existence until they discovered it in 1992. They discovered an alternate negative and were able to restore it using all kinds of modern technology. And so we got a copy of it, and we watched it last night. The first ever Academy Award-winning Best Picture, Wings, from 1927, winning in the 1929 first ever Academy Award presentation. And it was really entertaining because we were kind of in the spirit of what it must have been like to have been in a movie theater in the late 20s. Now, think about it. Talkies were just starting. The silent era was pretty much what was dominant in theaters. Theaters didn't have speakers. There was, you know, they weren't set up for sound. It was you know, this big event where you went and you watched something on the screen. You read the words. There was an organist playing on the side that would play along with the film. Sometimes there was an intermission. The theaters were huge, up to 4,000 people in a theater. All kinds of, there was a place to leave your kids. There was a bar, literally a bar for the husband to go if his wife is watching a romantic movie that he's bored with. That's how they advertised this. There was a place for women to go to powder their nose or whatever, and they could continue to watch the film because they had mirrors set up so that you could look at the mirror and see the film. Because it was silent, you didn't have to listen. And, you know, thinking about all of that and watching this this 2-hour and 15-minute silent epic, it was a pretty cool experience.
Yeah, yeah. The era, I think it was the advent of the movie palace.
Okay,
that,
yes.
That was the term for these just grandiose, just amazing community sort of social hubs where people would go and participate in this. And, yeah, it struck me, it was... This award season where we really didn't watch a lot of the films that had won, and this idea to go back and look at them and really watch every winner, and I think we'll keep going with it. This being the first one, it was exciting. I mean, it was a really a cool idea and just a lot of fun to get a good copy and just prepare yourself and then get involved in the story and how they were telling a lot of those stories. Then as a photographer, I'm really interested in some of the techniques that they used and the ways they're able to tell story with both the actor's expressiveness and delivery of dialogue, but also the text, some of the language. In one particular scene, they used the term "use guys" to illustrate somebody in a, you know, speaking colloquially, or they would show scenes of intoxication or other, you know, emotional.
Oh, about that scene of intoxication, basically the film revolved around two protagonists, two guys from the same town, both wooing the same woman, and they were both in the they're both pilots overseas, and at one point they were or at least one of them was drunk in Paris. The actor was really drunk at that time, and he was young. He was, I think, 22, and had never had alcohol before, so he got tipsy very quickly. So the scene of his drunkenness was not completely acting. It was pretty realistic. So there's that.
Yeah, and just the shots, the overlays, they double exposed some of the shots, so it would be two different scenes blended into one frame.
I was surprised by that. The special effects. When the guy was drunk, okay, he was drinking out of various glasses, and seeing bubbles everywhere, and they superimpose bubbles rising from the glass and from virtually everything he was touching into the sky.
Yes.
It was a special effect, and they actually did that back then. They also did some colorization. For instance, when a plane was on fire, you could see the orange of the fire. Now, they added this to the restored version, but the original version had it too. They were able to actually see the orange of the flame. And in some cases, silent movies had sound effects along with the score. So even though it wasn't dialogue per se, it was you could hear the engine of a plane. We chose the version we had two choices for the sound. We chose a pipe organ, which I think was more faithful to the original. So that was, you know, kind of getting into the spirit of it.
And more, yeah, definitely more common for the average theater at the time. The existence of an organ, a Wurlitzer or other organ, would be the way that you would hear the soundtrack to it, because most, I would say, suburban or not, you know, a big metropolitan 1,000-seat theater in the city, mm-hmm. would have much more in the way of the soundtracking and a full orchestra.
Absolutely,
but,
yes.
But an organ, having someone who could play, you know, maybe the lady that plays at the church or whatever comes and does, you know, the movies at night. But it was just so cool to see the early attempts and how much they were really playing with the medium. And then, of course, the scale. You noted just the amount of extras. They built entire trench fields in this this part of Texas, I believe.
Yeah, which is San Antonio.
Which is just just where it was filmed in great detail. They had tanks and really, really good replicas or lookalikes of the aircrafts at the time.
But the main actors were flying planes. One was a pilot and one learned how to fly. They were really flying planes.
Yeah, I read
in this film, and they had cameras attached, you know, for close-ups. I didn't think they did this in the 1920s, but they actually were up there in the air, and you had all kinds of other pilots doing stunts in the air. And to think about it, in the 1920s, for somebody to be seeing this in the theater, how many people had been on an airplane? How many people had ever seen what it was like above the clouds? That must have blown people away in that period of time to be able to see all of that.
Yeah, yeah. And they, I guess, had hired over 300 or something like that, like just a huge amount of pilots to get the look. And of course, military pilots were the best of them to get some of the really daring acrobatics and stuff that just your average, like, crop rural, you know, pilot or mail carrier or whatever other pilots there were.
Yeah.
You really needed the expertise to do all that tumbling and rolling, because it was incredible. I mean, they really show the acrobatics and the aerial views, and it did not look at all unrealistic. It was quite real.
It was so good that people thought it was footage from World War One. That's how good it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I was also thinking that period of time, 1927 was when the film came out. And by the way, a film like that, when it comes out, it basically would stay in that massive theater. This one stayed in, I think, for about 66 weeks. Now, think about that, the same film in the same theater for 66 weeks. And then after that, it goes to what were known as secondary theaters. There was no video then. There was no TV then. Basically, if you wanted to see this film, that's how you saw it. And I think in some cases that was the only time you could see it. It wasn't even around after that. So basically, the 1920s, late 1920s, people were fascinated with airplanes because they were new. But also in the film, people were fascinated with cars because they were fairly new. And you noticed some things about the cars they were driving, right?
Oh, sure, yeah. There's a car that they have in the early parts of the film that is referenced. And a lot of the vehicles were a big part of it. So there's a lot of forward-thinking stuff. Another thing that I think of is the electricity in Paris. When they're in Paris, they are in a hotel or wherever, and their sort of modern amenities are natural, right? It's just this urban place that, of course, has, you know, a phone on the wall, just like a normal hotel, but it's in, you know, 1920, and that you really don't see accurate photography and depictions of. Of course, electricity was around. I know that. I get it. But depicted and in a winning film this way just goes in with the confluence of technology and things that they got right for the era. I did hear or read that they I think the Wikipedia article says that their clothing choices were not period.
That's true. They didn't. There's only 10 years separating them.
But I know.
They used cars and clothing from 1927 instead of from 1917. Okay, you know, I can let them get away with that. But if you think about all the things that were happening, though, in the 20s, you had cars that were fairly new invention, airplanes, fairly new invention, telephones, you know, electricity, all of this was and films, of course, films.
Yeah.
Think about that. You know, basically since, I guess, the late 1890s, that's when people started seeing films and they were all silent. But that period of time was really the transition between silent movies and movies with sound. And I think this is the only Academy Award-winning film that was completely silent. So we're going to be seeing that transition. But everywhere. And you had the Great Depression that was about to hit people, too. And, of course, World War II, the sequel to World War I, was festering. So, wow, you know, this is a crazy period we're living in now, but you really start to think about what it must have been like then.
Yeah, I would also, I was going to say, don't forget radio. We saw a couple old radios in there, mm-hmm. which was, it was cool. Also, field radios, you know, the military.
That's right. Radio was a new thing, too.
It was a very new thing. And that's why I mentioned sort of the mundane, you know, that was part of the sets, because a lot of the sets were, you know, in the field or in a plane. But, you know, the hotel in Paris and stuff, you realize these things are, you know, something that, not a lot of people around the world would see. Nobody knew what, you know, it would be like to be in Paris at a big on leave from the military. And there's just amazing stuff. Also with gender roles and stuff. I mean, just the woman is working on this car with her neighbor. She's like the girl next door.
She literally is the girl next
door. Yeah, in this sort of love.
Clara Bow was the actress. She was a famous silent movie actress. And in fact, she made a lot of demands for this film to change the role so that she wasn't just, as she called it, icing on the cake or something. She wanted to be a real character-driven personality. And she was absolutely right, and I think that improved the story quite a bit. It's still, you know, you look at something like this, and I know a lot of people dismiss things of the past very quickly because it doesn't fit into the values of today. Yeah, there's sexism, we'll see racism, we'll see all kinds of ignorance, but we also can learn a lot by looking at it and studying it and seeing the similarities and seeing the differences. And that's what I think we got out of this, just all the things that we can recognize and the things that we just can't believe that's what people did back then.
But there's some of the things that you can't believe people did back then that are still going on.
Absolutely.
Too.
And that people are starting to do again.
Yeah, there's so much. I mean, you know, she's driving a truck and she's in the military at one point, you know, but she has no eyebrows. They're like painted on with a Sharpie or something.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. It's just there's so many like aesthetic things that are, I think, that speak to that we can look at now and say, gosh, you know, that's like the ideal of beauty, or that's the ideal of what men are to be, you know, going off into the military. And here's this whimsical character who's both beautiful and in the military because of this funny love story. But it really it was different, very different. And there were other sort of intimacy things, I would say, between the two soldiers, too.
Well, just to let people know so they know the story. First of all, we're talking about Wings, winner of the Academy Award Best Picture of 1929, the first Academy Awards, and the film was made in 1927. Actually, it was made before then, but released in 1927. Basically, the story involves, it's really, I mean, apart from a cast of hundreds and thousands, four people. Which is Jack. Jack is the guy that we follow for the most part. He lives next door to Mary. Mary's hopelessly in love with him, but Jack is completely oblivious to her because he is in love with
Sylvia,
who David is also in love with, Sylvia loves David.
Yep.
So they're a happy couple, but Jack keeps getting the impression that Sylvia likes him. In fact, gets to the point where he's saying goodbye to her when he's going off to war, and there's a picture of her for a locket on the table, and he just assumes it's for him, doesn't even read the inscription on the back that says, "To David with all my love," and just puts it in his locket, and she doesn't have the heart to tell him that, no, that's not for you. Meanwhile, Mary is chasing all over trying to get his attention, and it even gets to the point where, as you mentioned, Mary joins the motor pool or whatever, winds up overseas along with those two.
Yeah.
And even finds Jack in Paris when he's all drunk,
yep.
But he doesn't recognize her because he's all drunk, and she's chasing him around trying to get him to acknowledge her, and he doesn't even recognize. She gets him into a hotel room. This is kind of risque, actually. And while she's getting dressed, these two soldiers come in, and they see her getting dressed, and they assume she's a hooker, but they also know she works for the military. And she gets fired because of that, or forced to resign.
She's been back, yeah.
Yeah, even though that's not what she was doing. And so she comes back, and then when she comes back, she basically, things worked out after that. But what I realized, is that in this film, that whole trip was completely unnecessary for the plot. I mean, she basically winds up with Jack in the end, but she didn't have to go to Paris to do all that because he doesn't even remember that. All it does is show us how crazy she is.
Yeah, and she had learned how she joined the motor pool because Jack and her had worked on this car that he said she can take care of, but don't wreck it, you know, before he went off to the war. But that skill of her and the freedom of her then, you know, applying that, then being able to get into the military, it's unclear, but it's sort of implied that she's still looking for him or wants to be in his life and is willing to join this war effort up to and including then getting busted in this hotel room.
Yes.
At which point she has to go back because
it was sad. It was
because of the implied. Yeah, it was sad. Yeah.
Kind of pathetic seeing her chasing after him and not being recognized in any way.
Well, our reaction was she could do better. She could have just stayed home, found somebody else.
Right, right.
Why be so enamored with Jack? He's clearly not into you. There's other guys.
Of course, he was into her in the end when he realized, oh, my God, I'm really in love with you. It also, though, if you look at it in a different way, it's kind of like empowerment for Mary by going out on her own, driving around Paris, running the motor pool, whatever. It seemed like she was really in command.
And seeing for herself, she sees him, you know, and instead of believing something isn't real, she sees it before her eyes. I don't know. There is, yeah, I think a little bit of that. But it's again, packaged in this whimsical kind of, there's all this humor and other stuff that, again, we look back and we recognize, that's kind of silly, mm-hmm. or you know, why on earth is she doing this? But,
yeah. Another part of the film there's this Dutch guy who's enlisting as well.
Right.
And he keeps getting challenged because he has a funny name, all right, a funny non-American-sounding name. Now, this is something that ties into today.
Yeah.
Where basically he has to prove that he says this, I'm every bit as American as you. And people are and basically every time he says that, he takes off his shirt and people invariably think he's about to fight them. In fact, one time he gets decked. But what he's doing is he's showing them the tattoo that he has. It says Stars and Stripes Forever. And whenever they see that, they say, oh, yeah, you're one of us. And apparently that's all it takes. If you have a tattoo that says Stars and Stripes Forever, you can be from anywhere and people will say, yeah, you're one of us. The same basic arguments we're having now. Like, you know, accept people who are different as being your fellow citizens.
I thought the weirdest thing about that was he didn't have shirt sleeves. Every time he took off his coat, he wouldn't have shirts. If you have a dress shirt and a bow tie and a hat and all of, like, you know, period dress clothing. But he'd be pulling off his jacket to show his, like, bicep tattoo.
Right.
And he's got no shirt sleeves on his dress shirt. It just looks so silly. But that was his thing, you know. Maybe he liked to keep cool that way or something. But it was really, I guess, just to make it easy to show the bicep and tattoo. But it was really, really funny to show the diversity, I guess, confluence of people that were involved and coming together around this effort.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Anyway, the long and the short of it, see old films. Go and study history. It's fascinating. You can get into it, can learn so much. And I look forward to seeing more of these because we'll see developments of culture, society, changes, things that we've forgotten about. There's all kinds of ways to learn. Wings is the name of the film. 1929 is the year it won the Academy Award. 1927 is the year it was released, and I guess we move on to 1930 next.
Yeah, I'm not sure why it won or what the other films it was up against had going for them, but I would say I could see why this won because were so many different things that, and it spoke to a conflict that was universal or you know worldwide at that time. And they were trying new things with the effects and all the things we've talked about in the last 20 minutes.
It was easily the most complex silent movie I think I've ever seen, most developed. So for that reason alone, you think of silent movies, you think of Charlie Chaplin, you think of basically things that don't take very long to put together. Of course, there are exceptions, Birth of a Nation, Intolerance, D.W. Griffith, that kind of thing. This was something that I think was really, truly epic for the time, and we're seeing again.
Yeah, and what I know of Oscar winners, it really had a lot of those elements that you would expect. I mean, it's cool. We're kind of training ourselves, and I'm excited, as you said, to see a couple more.
Yes, definitely. Okay, but now back to today. All kinds of things are happening in our world, all of which are kind of crazy. First, another school shooting today in Maryland this time. Glock 9mm 16-year-old girl hit, critically injured. 14-year-old boy listed in good condition. Shooter killed by a police officer inside the school. Thoughts?
What a awful thing to have be a part of your day at school. I mean, you what do you say to that? You know, you're like happy that no one else was hurt, but someone did get shot by somebody. Just, you know, to keep them from shooting more people. Is this really learning? What are we learning? Is anyone learning?
Well, I mean, every time this happens, we learn how out of control the situation is. This happened at 8 a.m., first floor hallway. Somebody flipped out in some way. Now, in this case, were there warning signs? You know, sometimes there are warning signs, sometimes there are no warning signs. The guy in Las Vegas was not a school, you know, was not a kid, had no warning signs whatsoever, was allowed to buy all these weapons, and it could not be stopped. And if you knew it was going to happen, you couldn't have stopped it either. You know, if you could somehow get in a time machine and go back, you could say this guy should not have access to all this weaponry, but it's all legal, and you couldn't stop it. So you have a situation where, you know, as in Florida, there are multiple indications that the kid should not be around this kind of thing. Maybe you could have done something with all of that knowledge if you can get different agencies to cooperate, which is reality. You can't get them to cooperate. It doesn't happen. Sometimes it does, but very rarely. These are facts, and we have to take those facts into consideration when we start asking ourselves, should it be this easy? And here you have a situation. It wasn't an AR-15. It was a Glock. I know nothing about guns. I don't claim to. I don't really want to. But I do kind of have the sense that...
That's a small handgun.
Okay, I don't think a kid should have access to that. I don't think it's something that average people should be walking around carrying. It seems like a very deadly weapon that could be used in a fit of anger. In fact, it's used in fits of anger all the time.
It would hurt, and it could kill you. And it would hurt to get shot by one, and it would definitely be able to kill you.
So this is our reality. You know, this is something that it's not even on the front page. That's how insane this is. I guess you have to have 17 people killed for it to actually make a dent in the mass media. But here's the thing. We had the Parkland shooting just over a month ago. And this Saturday, there is going to be a huge demonstration in Washington, D.C., and many other demonstrations throughout the country. March for Our Lives. Yeah, it is something. If there's any good to have come out of all this, it's seeing the kids of this nation basically taking charge and shaking us and saying, get out of whatever it is you're in. This world is about to be passed on to us, and we want changes. And, you know, watching the reaction, watching how people treat these kids, people who are opposed to them, that is stunning. That is simply unbelievable to see the disrespect they're facing, being told that they're basically brainwashed or that they have no right to speak about this.
Or they have some other agenda than their own safety.
Someone said they weren't even citizens because they're not 18 yet. Unbelievable. If someone else said this, which I really do agree with, kids have every right to express opinions on being shot if they're old enough to be shot, and they certainly are, unfortunately. So things are changing, and I think people are beginning to wake up and listen. I just hope that they don't get discouraged. I hope that that we don't take it for granted, and we don't ever accept that things can't change. Things can always change, and it's up to the public to change them. You know, public perception is everything. And when you put pressure on elected officials, on the media, on big companies, they change. That's why they change. Why do you think companies like Google and Amazon and even Microsoft want to do the right thing? Because of public pressure. No other reason. You know, it's not that there's nothing in it for them. If they can do things that are bad for people, unless those people react, right? So you have to have some kind of accountability, and I think Facebook is learning that lesson.
Oh, what, being responsible?
it's been a bad week for them.
Their stock price is going down.
Yeah, yeah. And they're going to be learning quite a bit.
Well, they are going to have some chickens coming home to roost because they have not been proactive. It is a wildly, you know, profitable company that is really does not answer to anyone. And now they're talking about regulating Facebook. Yeah, imagine that. Regulating Facebook.
Well, you know, I don't know if we need government regulating them. I think people need to regulate them. You know, I think we need to hold them accountable. And we also need to use our own common sense, though.
I'm just saying that the conversation has gone that way is you had better believe not exactly something that Facebook would like in the discussion. They want to just go be quiet, you know, do their dirt and make lots of money, you know, build, you know, huge switches and give the designs away because they don't care. They're so rich, you know, and have everyone, you know, be a part of their platform with zero consequence for anything that doesn't go right. And this is something that I think politicians, our leadership has been saying has not gone right for a long time. And we're going to probably be hearing a lot more about this. Yesterday, just the last couple days have been a real whirlwind learning about these special exceptions for using data, and we'll probably be speaking a lot more about it.
Well, the website to learn more about March for Our Lives is marchforourlives.com.
Do they have a Facebook page?
I'm sure they do. There's a presence everywhere. There's 825 events worldwide.
800?
825 different events. There's probably one here on Long Island. I'm going to try and navigate this. Oh, look at that. There's little, what do you call those things that they put little things on the map?
Oh, the little
things.
Markers, I guess.
I don't know what they're called.
They're pins. I guess Google would call them pins. Okay, Maps would call them pins.
I'm going to zoom in. There's so many of them. It's ridiculous. But I'm zooming in now to see what's local. Still zooming. There's Long Island. Okay, it looks like there's three near us. So let's see what we have. Saturday, March 24th, 1 p.m., 5141 Wisconsin Highway, Port Jefferson Station. I don't know what that address is, but that's where it is. 5141 Wisconsin Highway, Port Jefferson Station. Okay, how about 100 Nichols Road in Stony Brook, 1 p.m.? I think that's here. I think that's Stony Brook University, 100 Nichols Road. Let's see, there's something behind that. I guess I have to zoom in further so I can get behind it. Yes, that's Stony Brook University, March for Our Lives. And let's see what this other one is behind it. They both say Stony Brook University, so I don't know if there's competing people posting.
Oh, no, this is great. I love that this stuff's going on. You know, wow. the platform aside, this will go on. This is in people's minds, and students are really, really fired up about it.
Oh, there's two of them because one of them is at 11 a.m. I don't understand this, but there's two Marches for Our Lives here at Stony Brook. One's at 11 a.m., one's at 1 p.m. I don't know where it is either. Oh, wait, more details. I'll click on that.
Where it's marching to.
Okay, here we go. On March 24th, the March for Our Lives movement will take to Stony Brook University to demand that we end the epidemic of mass shootings in our schools today. Hashtag March for Our Lives. The Undergraduate Social Welfare Alliance will be hosting a March for Our Lives at Stony Brook University. Please come to the SAC Plaza on 324 at 11 a.m. to march in demand of sensible gun control legislation. Our lives depend on it. Now, that's the 11 a.m. one. I'm going to see now if there's a difference between that and the one one at 1 p.m. But I have to get the map again. And, oh, my God, I have to zoom in all over again. I hate this interface. While I'm zooming in, you provide color or something.
Well, I like black and white personally, but I guess, yeah, what else can you say? I mean, it's amazing the coordination and leadership from young people and how much listening from other generations is going on. It really is, it's true to form. Like, we ought to be listening and letting young people lead like this. It's going to be interesting, I think. I'll have to see what I can do about maybe attending one of these. But it's it's, I guess, just become so absurd. I mean, what do you do? I mean, adults have just basically pushed this subject aside. They don't have to go to school and have backpack search and stuff like that. And I guess it's annoying enough, you know, and when you're so removed and making the decisions outside of the interest of young people, you're being inconsiderate. You're not actually experiencing what it's like to have to prepare for that. And as I've said before, students have so much, like, just pressure, you know, career, what's my occupation, you know, what are my interests, and how many extra things am I doing to, have something interesting to say when I am looking for opportunities, and all of that stuff, to then, you know, have to worry about lockdowns. And I just mm-hmm. don't understand what exactly they're seeing the silliness of it, realizing this is not something we need to be this is not something we need to be learning. We need to be learning other things, and they're actually they're taking the opportunity to teach us what is important and teach us what they know, I think, about government.
By the way, our phone number is 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB, if you have anything to add to this. And I click on that a whole bunch of times. There's no more additional detail for the 1 p.m. rally, so just assume that it starts at 11 a.m. at the SAC here at Stony Brook and continues into the afternoon. The one in Port Jeff Station, that's, as we said, 5141 Wisconsin Highway, 1 p.m. That's known as Resistance Corner. I didn't know this. Resistance Corner, 5141 Wisconsin Highway. Now, I'm going to go on to Google Maps and figure out where that is. And also, there's one in Patchogue, too, but I have to unclick and go back and find that one. Give me a second. I'll give you details on that. We really need better interfaces with things because... I'm seeing the whole planet Earth now, and I have to zoom in and separate this. Okay, Patchogue, I think, is right there. Okay, there we go. Patchogue, 31 Oak Street, Representative Zeldin's office. Okay, a Republican representative. He'll be more than happy to host a few hundred people, maybe 1,000 people, and meet right outside his office at 12 p.m., 31 Oak Street in Patchogue. March for Our Lives there. Hold him accountable.
Wow, that'll be an interesting lunch break for him, assuming he's around.
Yeah, he's going to show up to the office on a Saturday with demonstrators. I don't think so.
Yeah, right. No, he'll be out golfing or watching polo or something.
Yes. I'm trying to paste on a Mac. I never quite got that down.
Apple C.
Yeah, but you know what? I didn't cut in the right way either because I was using...
Apple V.
Yeah, but I did the copy thing that I'm used to in different systems, and it didn't tell me I made an error on the Mac. It just didn't do it. So now I'm pasting the wrong thing. So I have to get the address again.
I maintain you have to have an extra finger.
5141 Wisconsin Highway. I'm just going to
be an Apple user. You have to have 11 fingers to be an Apple user. I mean three finger shortcuts. That's just so. So silly. I don't like that about going back to Macs.
Okay, now I've clicked on the picture of 5141 Wisconsin Highway, and I'm looking at it. It's you know where that Staples is, where Pathmark used to be in Port Jeff Station, apparently by the train car.
Oh, goodness.
112 and 347, that's Resistance Corner. I'm not sure which corner is Resistance Corner. But that's where they're meeting at 1 p.m. So now we know that.
That's cool. Well, there's a lot of space over there, and maybe that will be established and forever known as Freedom Corner or whatever.
Resistance Corner. and Freedom Corner,
Liberty
too.
And Justice for All Corner.
Uh-huh. Yes.
No, this is great. And you know what? Get out there. Check it out. I would encourage any local media, local newspapers, student newspapers, documentarians, all of you, check it out. See what people are saying and get in the streets.
We have a caller. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi. I think I can add some information to the march in Port Jefferson Station on Saturday the 24th.
The one in Resistance Corner?
That's what we call it.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Well, now, okay, which corner is it exactly?
It's actually the southeast corner And it is by the railroad car.
Okay.
And it's being sponsored by four groups. I'm with the North Country Peace Group. We're one of the sponsors. My name is Myrna Gordon. The second group is Moms Demand Action, who have been in the forefront of gun control legislation and gun violence. It's a national organization. The third group involved is Long Island Rising. And the last group who is sponsoring is Building Bridges in Brookhaven. And what's great about this particular march is that it's being run by the students. Hello?
Yes, we're listening.
Oh, good. Okay, I wasn't sure you were there. And they are going to be speaking. We have about 20 students from local high schools. In fact, we had a meeting Sunday evening, and they plan the entire type of program that they want to have. And they are wonderful. We have students coming from Ward Melville, Miller Place, Hop Hog, Rocky Point, Center Reach. Did I say Miller Place?
Yes.
And these are kids who have a passionate feeling that something needs to be done, and they want their voices to be heard. It's
wow.
Cold Resistance Corner because we've had many demonstrations there over the past year and a half.
I know there was a women's march there, was that?
We've had two women's marches. And we've also had a climate change march. And we've also, the North Country Peace Group has also sponsored some other things there as well. So we decided that that's the name we wanted to call it. And I know that on some of the publicity, it does not give Route 112 and Route 347. So I do apologize for that.
Okay, well, it's good to be able to get the information out, and hopefully we're educating a lot of people as to where this is. But, you know, you bring out a very interesting point here that all these kids are the ones organizing it, because that is key. It's so important that they be the ones that are calling the shots here. But what I think a lot of people are marveling at is when this tragedy happened at the school in Parkland, how many kids there were such good spokespeople and such good leaders, and what were the odds of having so many articulate, intelligent people being able to take control of this issue? And really the response to that is that it's not that unusual. Every school has this kind of smart kid attending it, all kinds of amazing students and people growing up have something to say if you listen to them, and I think that really holds true here on Long Island as well.
There's no doubt about it that the students I've been meeting since we started organizing this have been phenomenal. They know exactly what they want. They know exactly what they don't want, and they are extremely determined to make their voices heard. And they made that apparent with meetings that we've had and with emails going back and forth. So this is their rally. There will be no politicians speaking.
Good.
That was their decision, by the way. And they will have the microphone, and we asked them to, if they wanted to play live music, if they wanted to speak, if they knew a classmate who perhaps was a bit shy in speaking, perhaps that person wanted to write something and their friend could read it for everyone. So this is their rally. And what's so unique is, you're right, it's not unusual to have them so composed about this one particular issue. And what's more important is that they are reading and understanding what is and what isn't, in terms of what the NRA is saying that's untrue and what they know to be true.
Two questions before we have to go. Number one.
Who am I talking to?
This is Emmanuel and Kyle in the corner over there.
Hi there.
Hi.
And we're doing Off the Wall every Tuesday from this from 6 to 7. But two questions we have. If you're a kid and you want to go to this, what do you do?
Okay, there are all different types of websites that you can go to. First of all, if you go to March for Our Lives, we're on the national registry for that. So kids are going for that. We've had outreach into almost all of the high schools in Suffolk County through the New York State United Teachers, which have put out blurbs to each of the, I think, 50-some-odd school districts in Suffolk County. So the kids are doing it basically by word of mouth and by other social media sites. So we're just hoping to get a really good crowd, hopefully. Two things we're hoping for. One is the weather, and two is the electricity for for our sound unit that nothing fails.
Well, I don't think it can keep kids away with weather. I think kids will go out in the weather no matter what it is. But my second question is, if you're an adult, how best can you support this? Do you show up? Do you stay away? What's the best thing for adults to do?
Oh, no. We want, oh, my goodness, no. We have so many adults coming to support the students and take their lead. We've had many, many actions there. In fact, the Women's March in 2017 drew over 2,000 people.
Wow.
The Women's March this year, we had close to 1,000. Our Climate March. So every parents, adults, anyone, we encourage everybody to come out to that day, the 24th, and support this really, really, this issue. It should be mandatory this Saturday for
yes.
everyone.
All right. Well, we will definitely be at one of them. Maybe we'll go to D.C. Maybe we'll go to Port Jeff Station. We'll see. Or Stony Brook. They're happening everywhere throughout the nation. MarchForOurLives.com is the website. Is there any other website you wanted to give out?
Yeah, you could go on to the North Country Peace Group Facebook page.
Okay.
Okay, and that will also give you some information about the march as well.
Okay, great. Listen,
okay,
thanks so much for your call, and we look. Maybe we'll see you on Saturday, and we'll certainly talk about it next week.
Right. Come up and introduce yourself.
Okay. Have a good night.
In fact, three members of our peace group, Bill McNulty, Mort McCluskey, and Jim Lynch, are all active with us.
All active on our airwaves, too. Okay, great.
I know they are.
good to hear. Good to hear.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care now.
Great to hear you.
All right, we are out of time, and we have a special gun-related outro to play as we await Finn's arrival. Kyle, we have to go to one of these. I don't know. Do you want to go to D.C.? Do you want to go to Port Jeff Station?
I want
to
go to Port Jeff Station now. I really I'm going to refer to Resistance Corner as such in the future, from now on, forever.
Whenever you go to Staples now, it's going to be Staples at Resistance Corner. Why don't we have – okay, how about this? The shopping center, whoever owns that shopping center, we insist – that they rename it Resistance Corner. I mean, how hard would that be? Wouldn't that be amazing to see that on the placard?
It just seems, from hearing this, it's been very well trafficked in the last year. I am ashamed that I missed the climate and some of the women's rallies there. Obviously, we were out of town or otherwise predisposed. But I think we should continue to use it and support this corner. And hopefully, yes, energy. Someone will bring an extra car battery or something.
And we know that ShopRite is coming to that corner.
Yeah, there's going to be a grocery store.
That's not public knowledge yet. See, we know things. We have connections. We know ShopRite's coming there, even though there are no signs.
It's as good a use as any for that space, though.
So ShopRite at Resistance Corner. How does that sound to you, shopping center owners?
Thank you for calling ShopRite. This is our Resistance Corner location.
There you go. See how good that sounds. Hey, we're out of time. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Go to your rally this Saturday. It's so important. MarchForOurLives.com. All kinds of information is available there. And keep listening to WUSB. I'm sure we'll be doing some live coverage. Have a good night.
Hickok, Jingle, Sardo, all of them vanishing into thin air. There's something downright weird about this whole thing.